And it's a good afternoon, Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're joining us from. My name is Ireti Bakare Yusuf. Welcome to another edition of Borderlines, the only show that takes you beyond borders. My guest today is perhaps one of the most critical voices in the Palestinian struggle, for liberation against a colonizing nation called Israel. His name is Mr. Omar Abgati. Hello, Omar. How are you? Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We had the news, which is why we started a little bit late. So apologies for that. You're the co-founder. There's so much we need to talk about. But let's start with a cause that I know is very, very dear to your heart. You're the co-founder of BDS, which is Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, I believe it is. Tell us about that. And I think that started, what, in 2000? Is it 2007?
2005.
Yes. So tell us about that, because most people in Nigeria, quite a lot of listeners, would not have heard about it. But even more so is that this is something, this is a movement that's been going on quietly. And, you know, since October 7th, it's now received even bigger profile. Tell us about it, what it is, how it was formed, and where it is now.
Yes, thank you very much for this. The Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, or BDS movement, was established by the absolute majority in Palestinian society in 2005, that is representing Palestinians inside historic Palestine, as well as those in exile, refugees who are not allowed to go home. They were expelled when the settler colonial regime of Israel came into existence, and Israel does not allow them back because of their identity, because they're Palestinian, basically. So BDS is inspired by the South African anti-apartheid movement and by the U.S. civil rights movement, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, and so on. Basically, it calls for ending Israel's occupation, ending its system of apartheid, and recognition of the right of Palestinian refugees to return home, in accordance with international law. When we say apartheid, it's not an inflammatory term that we're using. Today, there's a consensus in the human rights community, be it Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, many major international human rights organizations and experts agree that what Israel is doing to the Palestinian, the entire Palestinian people, constitutes apartheid according to the definition of the crime, this crime against humanity in international law. Now, BDS, to achieve those three rights, ending the occupation, ending apartheid, and the right of return for refugees, called for ending complicity with this regime at the state level, at the corporate level, at the institutional level. What do we mean by that? We mean that Israel's regime of settler colonialism cannot continue to oppress us and deny us our basic human rights without the support of powerful governments like the United States, United Kingdom, the EU, and so on, without corporations being involved with Israel's crimes, and without institutions, universities and theaters and many organizations also normalizing and doing business as usual with Israel's regime. This is all extremely important now because of the genocide happening against 2.3 million Palestinians in the besieged and occupied Gaza Strip. That's why BDS today is gaining a lot more traction even. It was already considered by Israel, quote, a strategic threat of the first order. That's how the Israeli government sees it. But since October 7th, since the beginning of Israel's genocide, it has taken an even bigger scope and a bigger space globally, from Indonesia to the United States and from Sweden to South Africa.
One of the most powerful things about BDS is 117 Palestinian unions joined to form BDS. And it also, and like you rightly said, it also includes, it's like a sort of global struggle for, you know, any geopolitical zone that, if you like, being oppressed. Is that correct?
Yes, it is an intersection. You're absolutely right. It's an intersectional movement in the sense that it sees Palestinian liberation as connected with other justice struggles. racial justice, climate justice, indigenous justice, women's rights movements, LGBT movements, and so on. We see the Palestinian struggle as connected to liberation struggles worldwide. This is why Black Lives Matter in the US has adopted BDS. This is why major trade unions in Brazil, in the United Kingdom, in South Africa, across the world have adopted BDS. This is why in the African continent, in many countries now, BDS is really growing among civil society, among justice movements working on various aspects. So we're not asking, let's say, progressive groups in Nigeria to leave everything they're doing and just stand in solidarity with Palestine. No, we're saying standing in solidarity with Palestine, especially today at the time of genocide, is very much connected to other struggles in Nigeria, including vis-a-vis its former colonial power and you know, the neocolonialism of Europe that most of us in the Global South are now talking about. Since Ukraine, it has come to the fore, but with Gaza, this Western hypocrisy and this neocolonial system that controls the world, to basically, the international forums, the FIFA, the Olympic Committee, everything called international, is controlled by the same gang of Western colonial powers. And today, this has become a Global South issue vis-a-vis the North. It's not just a Palestine issue.
Indeed. One of the successes that BDS has had is, you know, now we're hearing about boycotts, McDonald's, Starbucks, you know, brands like Puma, AXA, HP, even the recent boycott Zara. How do you pick which, you know, business organizations to actually target?
Sure.
And if one, you know, if one was going to say, okay, I'm not going to wear, let's say I'm a female, I'm not going to wear Zara anymore, how do I let the people who follow me know why I'm not going to, you know, without just saying, oh, this is a BDS movement, how do I let them know why it's important that I'm not going to be wearing Zara anymore, for instance?
Okay, I'm so glad you posed this question because it's very important. In Nigeria, across Africa, across the world, you'll see those long lists of companies that are complicit in Israel's violations of human rights. That's not BDS. We don't advocate those long lists. It doesn't work. We have to be strategic because I cannot expect you or anyone else to boycott 100 companies. It's not practical. No one can do that. Really, no one can do that. So to be effective, to be impactful, we focus on criteria on what to target. For example, Zara, you mentioned there was a quick campaign against it, but when we looked into the details, we have not really called for a boycott of Zara, by the way.
Right.
But there was an upheaval against it.
Huge, yes.
So how do we select a target? We have four criteria. First, level of complicity. The more complicit the company is in Israel's crimes, the better target it makes for BDS. Second, intersectionality or cross-movement interest. For example, a company violating Palestinian rights involved with the Israeli police, with the Israeli army, with Israeli illegal settlements, or a company that's involved in all the above, but also involved in violating women's rights or violating black people's rights or child labor. The second would be a better target because it connects the Palestinian struggle with those other struggles.
Indeed.
Migrant rights, anti-racist rights, you know, struggles and so on and so forth. Third criterion is media appeal, which means if you have two companies, both of them complicit, but one of them is a big brand like HP, like Carrefour, like AXA, like Puma. And Puma, I have something to say because we just reached a big success, big victory against Puma. I'll mention it in a second. But those big brands, or now McDonald's, for example, we have endorsed the McDonald's boycott vis-a-vis a company that no one has heard of, but is as complicit. We pick the one that is more famous because it allows us to reach media. And through the media, we reach exactly the people you're asking me about. How do you reach the millions of people? Because you don't want to convince one, you know, one person at a time. You want to reach millions. And since the mainstream Western media is really blocked to our justice movement, they really block us. There's a blackout against us. They don't allow our quotes to be used. Then we use social media and we use influencers, and that's how we spread the word. So a famous singer in Nigeria adopting a BDS campaign, then her fans or his fans you know, millions of them will learn about this campaign. Will learn, oh, so McDonald's is being boycotted because McDonald's franchise in Israel has supported the Israeli army while it's committing genocide. They've given them free gifts of food, cheering them while they're committing genocide in Gaza. So yes, McDonald's is boycottable until it stops its relationship with its branch, or franchise in Israel. So that's how we get the information. So level of complicity, intersectionality, media appeal. The fourth and last criterion is potential for success. What we mean by that, if you have a company that is, you know, perfect target, it fills all the above categories, yet it's a monopoly. You cannot win against a monopoly because there's no alternative. You cannot boycott the only supplier of a specific product because then, you know, what can people do? If it's a vital product, there's no alternative. So we don't go after monopolies. We put them on the shelf for a better day when they're no longer monopolies. So just going back very quickly to Puma, we've been waging a campaign against Puma since 2018. Many, many athletes, athletic clubs, and many supporters across the world have joined the campaign, and many clubs have dumped Puma, affecting its reputation, its brand. 2 days ago, Puma announced that it will not renew its contract with the Israeli Football Association when it expires in December next year. So one might say, why did Puma announce it so early? I mean, it's still December 2024. Why announce it now that, you know, next year we're not renewing the contract? Because they're hurting. Because the brand is hurting. The reputation, it has been damaged. Many famous athletes in the US said, we will not accept sponsorship from Puma because it's oppressing Palestinians. The Israeli Football Association has teams that are based in settlements, and therefore we will not support Puma. We will not even accept sponsorship from Puma. So Puma bowed to BDS pressure and announced it's walking out of Israel next year.
Well, that's a huge, well done. That's a huge success. Let's talk about people and power. When I say people, I'm talking about the Palestinian people. One of the strengths of the Palestinian nation is the huge diaspora that it has. Now, as one who is in the diaspora, what do you think as a Palestinian? Because yes, I've seen, you know, I have to say 93% literacy rate, lots of PhDs and academics within the Palestinian diaspora. But what can an ordinary Palestinian do without, not necessarily just in BDS, but as an individual, to actually raise awareness within their small community? It might be somebody perhaps that can't speak up openly because they don't want to lose their jobs, because we all need a livelihood. So what can they do within that small micro space?
Sure, but just a correction, I'm based in Palestine.
Probably. Oh, you are? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Currently, I'm out of Palestine, but I'm based in Palestine permanently. So I'm not really, I used to be a refugee in the diaspora, but through marriage, and my wife is based there, after a very long legal battle, we got the papers in 1993. So since then, I've been living permanently in Palestine. But going back to your question, yes, the Palestinian diaspora, the exilic community, Palestinians in exile, who are half the Palestinian people, by the way, you're not talking about a small minority. Out of the 14 million Palestinians or so, about 7 million are in exile, not allowed to go home because of their identity, basically. And as you rightly said, the level of education among Palestinians is one of the highest in the world. But that doesn't give us power enough to face Israel, supported by the colonial savage West, basically. The US Empire, the UK, the European Union. So it's Israel's regime of oppression, its apartheid regime, is supported by such massive powers and their media and their institutions. So for example, now, in every university, every institution in the West, they're going after advocates of Palestinian rights to suppress them, to silence their voices. So they're trashing all their liberal democratic talk about freedom of expression and human rights. Suddenly, when it comes to protecting Israel from accountability to international law, when Israel is committing genocide, suddenly They step on all these principles of human rights and freedom of expression, and they suppress not just Palestinians. Some of our Jewish partners in the United States, in Europe, who support BDS and who struggle with us to end Israel's system of apartheid, are being suppressed now, are being canceled by the establishment that cannot tolerate any criticism of Israel. So imagine for Palestinians, it's that much more difficult. Again, this is another reason, the first the issue of principle, but it's also a strategic reason why Palestinians must connect our struggle with other struggles.
Sorry to interrupt you. We're going on a couple of minutes break. We'll be right back, and I'll please like you to continue where you left off. Is that okay?
Sure.
Lagos,
sure.
The number is 0700-993-993-993. If you want to learn more about BDS, you've got to call. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Lagos, to Borderlines. My guest is Omar Baguti. He is the co-founder of BDS. You must know what BDS is if you've been listening. That's Boycott, Divest, Sanctions. You can join the conversation on 0700-993-993-993. We have a female-only line, which is 01465-7190. As usual on Borderlines, you know, it's better for you to send a message. So send a message to 0809-597-5805. Our website is nigeriainfo.fm. You can watch us live on YouTube. Mr. Baguti is also with me via Zoom, so you can see him on YouTube on Nigeria Info 99.3, and we're streaming on Facebook Live. Twitter is Nigeria Info FM. Instagram is Nigeria Info FM Lagos. Thank you, Omar, for staying with us. Yes, you were saying, let me allow you to finish the part you were talking. So you were coming on to the Palestinian.
Yes. So going back to the Palestinian struggle, we really believe in intersectionality, connecting it with struggles. I'll give you an example. Across the African continent and across the global south, any average person will ask us, we have enough problems of our own. We have to deal with so many issues in the global south. You think why should we take a position against Israel just in solidarity with Palestinians? And what we say, well, solidarity is an international obligation. Everyone should stand in solidarity. When South Africans were fighting apartheid, we all stood in solidarity. I was a student in New York, and I was part of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. So that's an international commitment. But it doesn't stop there. It's also an intersectional struggle. What I mean by that, look at Israel's role in the African continent. What is Israel's biggest export to the African continent? Weapons, spyware, and all type of election rigging technologies that help authoritarianism, that fan civil wars, that help pillage the wealth of African nations by Israeli companies, just like the American companies and British and French companies. So Israel is part of this colonial West that is really, it's a new form of colonialism in Africa. So even if you forget the Palestinians, Israel's impact on the African continent has been horrendous, just like in Latin America, just like in Myanmar. In the middle of the genocide against the Rohingya in Myanmar, Israel was exporting weapons to the regime. Across the African continent, it is exporting weapons field tested on Palestinians. So its impact is that terrible. This connects our struggles. Mm-hmm. We have a common enemy.
Yes. So let's talk about celebrities. There are certain celebrities, specifically US celebrities, who have been called out for staying silent. I must talk about TJ Khalid. There's no way of avoiding that. You know, he's Palestinian. He's got a huge profile. He hasn't said anything. There are the likes of Beyonce, who launched her film Renaissance in Israel. When that film was launched, you know, You Can't Break My Soul, the song, was being played, you know, by Israelis. And there were so many others. One does find that very unusually, the majority of US celebrities, be it black or white, have been very quiet. What do you make of that, and what do you put that down to?
Well, first, there's also the other side.
Okay.
We have never seen as many Hollywood A-listers sign on statements calling for ceasefire, humanitarian aid into Gaza, freedom for Palestinians. The number of Hollywood figures that have come and supported such statements is unprecedented. We've never had this many A-listers. Some of the biggest names in the industry have signed the statement and have paid a price. They've been vilified, they've been attacked by the Hollywood establishment, which is extremely pro-Israel, and by some US politicians connected to Israel's lobby and Israel's cultural lobby. Israel has a full cultural lobby, well-funded lobby that attacks anyone who dares speak out against Israel in Hollywood, in the music industry, in the recording and publishing industries, and so on. Yet, many, many, many A-listers in Hollywood and other figures have come out. For example, and it's women of color who take the lead always, by the way. I'll come to Beyoncé in a second. I won't ignore this. But for example, a key star of Scream 7, this famous Hollywood film that's coming out, she tweeted Free Palestine. She stood with the Palestinians and she was canceled by the production company in Hollywood. She was removed from the cast, and she's a key star in Scream 7. And she said, you know what? I don't care. I stand with the Palestinians for their freedom. So she took a very principled position, and many other artists came and said, we agree with her. We reject this Hollywood bullying of artists over their political statements. But there's a lot of bullying, a lot of intimidation, and a lot of canceling. People who are less established are losing their careers. I'm talking about journalists, artists, writers, all sorts of people, nurses, professors, who are losing their careers because the establishment is trying to shut them down, basically, is trying to silence them. So this has intimidated some people, but that does not excuse people who have a huge profile and therefore who are privileged enough, protected enough, and powerful enough to speak out, but they haven't. This is cowardice. There's no excuse for it. This is cowardice. The Palestinians are not going through difficult times. We're going through the world's first televised genocide, the first in history. No genocide, not in Rwanda, not in Myanmar, not in Srebrenica. No genocide in history was televised, was live streamed for everyone to see. They're bombing buildings, residential towers, on TV, and they don't care. It's that level of impunity. What excuse is there for anyone to stay silent when they have the power to speak out? To finish this point with Beyoncé, we issued a nuanced position on Beyoncé. We first thanked her for never playing Tel Aviv, and we cannot ignore this. Beyoncé has received a lot of offers worth a lot of money by Israeli producers to play Tel Aviv, and she never agreed. That's to her credit. Taylor Swift, by the way, has never played Tel Aviv either. So we do give them credit for that. They've resisted at least that temptation to play Tel Aviv and all the money and fame that comes with it. But Beyoncé and Taylor Swift and others, all those artists, do not control the distribution of their film.
Indeed.
So it's the distribution company that controls it. But when you're a Beyoncé or a Taylor Swift, you're powerful enough to call this distribution company and tell them, look, I don't want my film shown in Tel Aviv. Mm-hmm. Don't get me in trouble with all my fans, especially black fans in the US, who are completely supportive of Palestinian rights. Most of Beyoncé's fans, and she knows that, support Palestinian freedom. Most of her fans, she knows that very, very well. I mean, the Black American community is extremely supportive of Palestine, the most supportive of any community in the U.S. And she knows that. So she stands with Black Lives Matter, Beyoncé, she stands with all these justice struggles. Well, guess what? All those people support Palestinian liberation as well. Mm. So she could have done something, but she hasn't. And we criticized her for that. But we, in our work in general, in BDS, we don't label people and we don't attack the individual. We attack the act. So when Madonna played Tel Aviv, we did not label Madonna. We said, you're playing Tel Aviv. is crossing our picket line. It's undermining our struggle. It is an immoral act. We don't call the artist immoral. We call the act immoral.
Indeed.
This is important, not just on principle, because it allows us to reach our fans. The fans know that we deal respectfully with their artist, with their idol, and that brings in a lot of fan support for BDS campaigns, actually.
Let's bring it now closer to the political space, because I'm sure you have a heck of a lot to say about that. I think it's the Israeli, I've forgotten his title now. Anyway, he was with the American security, Jake, what's his face, that's visiting.
Jake Sullivan.
Thank you, Jake Sullivan, that's visiting Israel right now. And one of the things that he said in the press conference is that the war in Gaza is going to continue for several months. What do you have to say to that?
Well, the U.S. government, whether it's the White House or Congress, are partners in genocide. They're not just complicit, they're full partners in genocide, in Israel's genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. They're arming Israel while it's committing genocide. They are enabling every aspect of its war on Palestinians, and they're shielding Israel from accountability at the United Nations and in every international forum. The US and Germany and the UK in general, and some Western powers, are defending Israel in those forums and preventing Global South and other states from taking any measures of accountability against Israel, as was done against apartheid South Africa, for example. Whether it's a sports boycott, whether it's a military embargo, whether it's suspending Israel's membership in the United Nations or in FIFA or in the Olympic committees, you know, all these international forums are so hypocritical. Days after Russia's invasion of Ukraine, they imposed the most severe sanctions in their history against Russia. Well, Israel's settler colonial regime has been going on for 75 years, not days, not months, 75 years. And now it's committing genocide for weeks on end, and they couldn't find a reason to suspend Israel. And we've been struggling for that. And they're saying, no, no, we don't mix sports and politics. We don't mix arts and politics. We don't mix. Until it comes to Ukraine, then suddenly it's okay to mix politics and everything. But when it comes to Israel, oh, we don't mix politics with whatever, culture, and so on. So it's important to say that Jack Sullivan, what he's saying is that the U.S., as a partner in this genocide, is involved in the decimation, the elimination of Palestinians in Gaza. And by that, I mean not just an inflammatory term. Hundreds of international scholars, including Israeli scholars of genocide and the Holocaust, have come out and said, this is a textbook case of genocide, with the intent being so abundantly clear. One Israeli leader after another used extremely racist, dehumanizing language and expressed their intent to destroy the Palestinian people, not just to go after this or that armed group. So the U.S. is very much partner in that genocide.
When you hear Biden taking a slight step back from his original position, now he's saying, you know, even though he spoke off the cuff, that, you know, Israel is bombing indiscriminately. Given what he said from the offset, what is your response to that?
My response is that he is paying a very dear political price domestically. He is losing most of his democratic base. And we're not just talking about the progressives, you know, the Cori Bush and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. No, he's losing much more than that. He's losing the young generation. And the people of color in the Democratic Party are very pro-Palestine, and he knows that. Also, in what they call swing states, states that sometimes vote Democrat, sometimes vote Republican, they call them swing states. It could go either way because the difference is very small. The Arab community and the Muslim community happen to be quite big in several of those swing states. A few weeks ago, they launched a campaign called Abandon Biden, which means come the next elections, you can kiss our votes goodbye, because they call him Genocide Joe. That's his nickname now, Genocide Joe. So they said there is no way on earth we will ever vote for this genocide-enabling president. So now there's real pressure in the Democratic Party to choose another candidate. Dump Biden and choose another candidate. This is internal U.S. politics, but that's what's mostly impacting Biden's equivocation. He's hesitating now. In the first 2 months, he was all for the genocide continuing, finding all kinds of justifications for it, and using extremely dehumanizing language, repeating and amplifying Israel's bogus, fraudulent propaganda as if it were true. And he is the president of the U.S. empire, yet he acted like a propaganda tool for Israel throughout this genocide. And Palestinians can never forget this complicity.
Let me go to the calls, because I think the lines are going. I think lots of people have questions. Bear with me. I'm coming to your calls now, Nigeria, Lagos, wherever you're calling from. Hello? Hello?
Memnon from Festa.
What's your name?
So, the two questions.
What's your name?
Memnon from Festa.
Memnon, go ahead.
Yeah. So, the two questions I have for you. Yes. So, first of all, let me thank him for being on the show. Is that, first of all, in this state of insanity we are in, it's almost like what, no matter what any country does, as far as one of the five veto it, nothing is going to happen. So, it's almost like in this, then my first question is, in this current state that the fate of this world more or less is in the hand of these five countries, no matter what any other person does. So what should be the next step for those who support Palestine? Then my second question would be, if I'm relating this to the Russia-Palestine war, it's clear
you
that...
You mean Russia-Ukraine?
Russia-Ukraine war.
Yes, go ahead.
If I'm relating this one, it's clear that in this war, why the casualties are so high is that the militaries are not balanced at all.
Okay, so what's Palestine your question? I need you to hurry up. Like I need you to hurry up. What's your question?
Okay, what I mean is that it's looking like now is either an escalation if Russia or China chooses to support Palestine,
okay,
or annihilation from Israel's point.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, so thank those you. Are my two
thank
questions.
You.
I like Moni's thoughts.
Thank you very much. Hello?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, I have Emmanuel on the line. I'm calling from.
Okay, Emmanuel, your line just cut off. I'm so sorry. Omar, let me come to you with the two questions that I have. The others will be calling back and the lines are alive. The first one is a regular listener of the show said why it's like everybody is forgetting what Hamas did on October the 7th. Why did Hamas try to annihilate Israel on October the 7th? That's the first one. The second question... which is from Menno. He said he tried to juxtapose Russia and Ukraine to what's going on in Palestine and Israel. And he said if China or Russia were to get involved, it'll basically, what he's saying is, will it escalate the whole, you know, the war? And number one. Number two is, he then talked about the UN resolution, which I intend to talk to you about, resolution 377. So we'll save that. I'll just leave you to answer those two questions. We'll save that because we'll talk about that a bit later.
Okay, on the first question, it's very important where you start the timeline of violence. In other words, it's extremely important in any situation of oppression to see the context of oppression as the initiation of violence. Let me quote the Brazilian philosopher, Paulo Freire, who said, quote, "With the establishment of a relationship of oppression, violence has already begun. Never in history has violence been initiated by the oppressed. Violence is initiated by those who oppress, who exploit, who fail to recognize others as persons, not by those who are oppressed, exploited, and unrecognized." End of quote. What Paulo Freire is basically saying, when you have a system of slavery and the slaves rebel against their slave master, the slaver, you may agree or disagree with the tactics used in the slave rebellion, but you've got to end slavery. That's the beginning of all violence. in a situation of colonialism, as all African understands, when you resist colonialism, colonialism is the initial violence. So some tactics of the resistance may or may not be legal, may or may not be moral. And you can take a position on that, but you've got to remember the context. Second point is, those who want to condemn this or that particular tactic used by any resistance group in any colonial situation, it's okay to condemn, but so long as you have the moral standing to do so, by having already condemned the situation of oppression. If you have not condemned the oppression, you cannot condemn the oppressed when they do something you don't like. To have the moral standing to condemn the oppressed, you've got to condemn the oppression beforehand. So, I mean, that is the very important point. Now, let's not forget that Israel for 75 years has been ethnically cleansing, killing, stealing land, incarcerating, denying us our human rights and our very humanity. For 75 years, this is the context. Now, I am in the BDS movement. It's a nonviolent movement. We aim at ending all violence. But to end violence, you've got to end oppression. The root cause of violence is oppression. So we really are interested in a very peaceful, just, dignified future for everyone. But to get there, we've got to end, dismantle the system of settler colonialism and apartheid, because that is the initial violence. That is the first question.
Let me expand the second question before you, if I may interrupt. Sure. Let me expand it before you answer it. I think what's more important is, do you envisage, you know, we have the likes of Hezbollah on the in the Lebanon border with Israel, who have been exchanging, you know, rockets with Israel. Do you envisage the region, the Middle East region, getting more involved in, you know, this current war that seemingly just bordered for now?
It's already happening. And the U.S. is saying that it's happening. It's not just in Lebanon. It's also in Yemen, in Sana'a, in Yemen, the Houthi groups are attacking shipping that is destined to Israel. They're saying, so long as Israel is imposing a deadly siege, a complete siege on the 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza, not allowing food, water, fuel, medical supplies to go in to the Palestinians, they're starving our people to death. This is what even Oxfam is saying. Oxfam is saying, quote, Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. That's a quote by Oxfam. So the Yemenis are saying, well, you want to starve them to death? We will not allow any ships to reach your ports. Now, whether this is legal or not can be debated. Whether it's acceptable or not can be debated. But to answer your question, it is already regional. In Lebanon, it is a lower flame. It's not yet a full conflagration. With Yemen, it's a very new dimension. And also in Iraq, the United States is saying that Iraqi resistance groups are attacking U.S. Army bases in Iraq and Syria. So the U.S. is already involved. Yemen is involved. Lebanon is involved because this is a genocide. And the longer it goes on, the chances are that this regional conflagration might happen will be very, very high. Yes.
Let's talk about humanitarian. Go ahead. Yeah, go on. Go ahead.
No, sorry. Go ahead. You wanted to continue this before I go to the second question?
Yeah, please finish. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say about the Russia and China issue for the second question.
Yes.
That Russia and China have consistently voted for Palestinian rights at the United Nations. That's for sure. But they both have been neutral. I mean, they haven't taken any strong position telling Israel, you've got to stop your war crimes, your genocide. No, they just said, you know, human rights violations. We need a ceasefire now, which is much better than the Western powers, granted. But it's not enough. It's not enough. They're on the sidelines, basically, and looking on to this and seeing what will happen. Well, it cannot be business as usual because this is genocide. It's televised genocide. They're killing our people. And anyone who thinks this will stop in Gaza is dead wrong. The Western powers, especially the US, is using this with Israel to test not just weapons, They always test their newest weapons on our bodies, and they sell them. Israel sells them as field tested across the African continent, across Latin America, across Asia. But now they're testing something much, much more sinister and fatal to humanity, a doctrine of total lawlessness, law of the jungle, basically. Might makes right, without any masks.
Okay, we've got to go on a quick break. Bear with me. I almost missed my timeline. Bear with me, please.
You're listening to your number one station for talk. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Sorry about that, Omar. I almost missed my timeline. I was so busy listening
to you.
We can go back. Please continue what you were saying.
Okay. What I was saying is that Israel is testing not just new weapons on Palestinian bodies to sell to the world as field tested. It is testing a new doctrine, whereby international law is frozen. Principles of human rights are frozen, and they can get their way to do whatever they wish, bombing hospitals on TV, bombing United Nations shelters and schools, bombing mosques and churches. The world's third oldest church has been bombed and damaged by Israel. More than 20 Christian Palestinians in Gaza were massacred, one of the so many massacres in Gaza. So this doctrine, if they get away with it, it can be tried against any weaker nation in the future. So the British and the French and the Germans, they can try it against any weaker nation or any racialized community in Europe as well. So this is a danger to humanity, and not just the Global South. Everyone should be concerned, and everyone should help us hold Israel accountable to international law. No state has to be treated like above international law. Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa, who was a dear, dear mentor to me. I knew him personally. Archbishop Desmond Tutu once wrote in The Guardian in the UK that Israel is put on a pedestal above everyone else and above international law. An extremely powerful metaphor. The BDS movement seeks to take Israel off the pedestal so that it's treated like every other state committing those heinous, barbaric crimes.
I was supposed to have, I'm sure you know Noor Ode. Do you know Noor?
Yes.
Right. Noor was supposed to be my guest immediately after you. But I'll just read out what she sent to me. My friend in Gaza is injured and ambulances can't get to him. He's a journalist. I worked with him when I was there. I am a mess. I don't know if I can stay composed for this interview. I am really sorry. She said she would try. And then she went on to explain to me, he's part of the Al Jazeera team. They were working filming a shelter that was targeted where many were killed. An Israeli drone struck them and first responders with a missile. The reporter was injured with shrapnel and managed to escape. But Sama, that's her friend, was badly injured. He was calling for paramedics. Israeli forces are shooting at anyone who tries to get to the injured. We've heard many, many, many. So Noor is not able to join. But we've had many, many, many reports about this, especially in the West Bank, where ambulances are not being able to go to the injured. The siege that was on Jenin for some 5, 6, 7 days, the same thing happened there. The West Bank has been under consistent and persistent. Am I supposed to go on break soon? Okay, I'll be going on break soon. Raids, etc., etc. At which point can a nation, just because it's at war with a group, get the permission to stop ambulances, paramedics, hospitals from helping the injured civilians? At which point does that ever happen in history? I'm going to start. We're going on a break in a minute. I don't understand, but then we'll continue. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay. It's a state that is given full impunity by the world's only empire, the United States, by the European Union, and by the UK, Australia, and Canada. That's what impunity looks like. It's when a criminal gets a green light to continue to be a serial killer and going destroying, demolishing the rules of international law, the rules of common decency and humanity. And that's what I said. This is a danger to humanity, not just to Palestinians.
Indeed. We'll be right back. Okay, I believe we have the news. It's for about 5 minutes, just the news headlines. Would you mind staying, please, Omar?
I will have to leave very shortly, but I'll stay for a few minutes.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're listening to your number one station.
This is The Voice 93.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Big bull rice here in the pot. Seven it up, I stay hot. Stone free premium parboiled rice, big bull in the pot.
So nutritious and tasty, serve it up with style.
Cooking the light for that great party, jollof rice, big bull rice here. Yeah.
Big bull long grain parboiled rice contains protein and fiber, a source of vitamin B, and is great for all rice dishes. Big bull rice, tasty rice, nourish you.
Big bull rice. Big bull rice here yeah, in the pot. Seven it up, I stay hot. Stone free premium parboiled rice, big bowl in a pot.
So nutritious and tasty, serve it up with style.
Cooking the light for that great party, jollof rice, big bowl rice, yeah.
Big bowl long grain parboiled rice contains protein and fiber, a source of vitamin B, and is great for all rice dishes. Big bowl rice, tasty rice, nourish you.
Welcome back, Lagos, Nigeria, wherever you're joining us from. I'm still with my guest, Omar Baguti. Thank you very much, Omar, for joining. You were saying earlier about, but I think because you've only got a few more minutes, let's move on to UN Resolution 377. So the resolution before that, which was to call for an immediate ceasefire, was vetoed by the US. Then, The two of the other countries then said, look, we have a responsibility for peace. There is still, we may not be able to stop the Americans from using their veto, but we can also call for another vote called Uniting for Peace, which is Resolution 377 for an immediate ceasefire. And in that vote, we had 153 countries in favor, with only 10 against and 23 abstaining. Interestingly, the UK, who supported Israel, who were, you know, sort of, if you like, speaking the same narrative and rhetoric as the US, also abstained. First of all, what does that 153 in favor out of 193 countries, what does that mean? The power of that. Talk to us about the power of that vote.
It means that most of humanity recognizes what's happening, that Israel and the US, plus the UK and European powers, are destroying the international legal system that has prevailed since World War II, no less. They recognize that. There was an interview with a senior G7 official in the Financial Times about a month ago, where that official, from the Global North, obviously, said, we can no longer talk in the Global South about Ukraine or about human rights. They will laugh at us and they'll kick us out of the room. No one will listen to us when the West starts lecturing about human rights and journalists' rights and medical rights. You know, no one cares what we say because they see us as hypocrites. Indeed, most of the world today is calling the West's bluff. They're saying you're hypocritical. You don't care about human rights. You care about domination and your hegemony and your banks and your corporate interests. You don't care about humans if they're not white, basically. The rest of humanity that is not white, you don't care at all about that. And that shows in your not just supporting Israel politically, you're arming it. The weapons, the munitions, the airplanes, everything used by Israel against our people to commit the genocide in Gaza is supplied by the US, Germany, the UK, France, Italy, Canada. I mean, those are the same states that are defending Israel from international law, are arming it to commit genocide. So this vote at the UN shows this genocidal US-Israel axis being more isolated than ever. So this is another heavy price that the United States is paying. The Biden administration is paying a heavy price domestically, losing voters in the Democratic Party, his base, basically, and externally, internationally. The U.S. is becoming more of a pariah state along with Israel.
We've had and we have seen, like you said, you know, live systematic dismantling and unthreading of every single aspect of Palestinian life, social structure, livelihood, businesses, schools, hospitals, places of worship. Yet we hear the Americans, we hear Blinken, we've heard Jake Sullivan today. Everybody keeps talking about the day after the war. Has anybody at all thought to ask the Palestinians what they want? Because Israel is saying we're going to stay in Gaza. Americans are saying we want the Palestinian authorities to be there. Nobody has asked the Palestinians who what they actually want the day when this bombardment and the genocidal war stops. What are your thoughts on that, please?
First, before we talk about the day after, how about we talk about the current day of genocide? How about stopping the genocide first, and then let's discuss the day after? That's the first point. So while the U.S. is arming Israel to continue its genocide and giving it a political line of support to continue the genocide, it is in no position to even discuss the day after. Second point, whatever happened to the inalienable right to self-determination? It's one of the pillars of international law that the U.S., by the way, helped put in place, the principle of self-determination. At one point, the U.S. did champion that principle. Whatever happened to that? When nations have a right to determine their future, their destiny, including who leads them and what system of politics they want to be ruled by. It is not up to the U.S. It's not up to a colonial power like Israel. It's not up to anyone but the Palestinians, as you rightly said. But again, I think they're trying to divert attention from the ongoing genocide and the horrific, horrific, apocalyptic, as UN experts have called it, apocalyptic humanitarian situation for Palestinians in Gaza, to discuss some theoretical, hypothetical day-after scenarios, and then move everyone to a debate on, oh, would this party be better than that? Or should Egypt be involved? Or should Saudi Arabia be involved? Well, if we keep discussing that, there won't be many Palestinians left in Gaza because Israel is actively ethnically cleansing them. They're starving them, thirsting them, bombing them, injuring them to push them to the Egyptian border, and then they will bribe the Egyptian regime or push it to accept hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees, who are most of the irony of history, the absolute majority, over 80% of Gaza, are refugees from the Nakba, the 1948 ethnic cleansing of Palestine. So they're refugees for the second or third time now, and they want to ethnically cleanse them again. This is what's happening while we're debating the day after.
Indeed. We've heard of persecution of Palestinians, even in Europe, in places like Germany. Germany, a country that's obviously racked with guilt, given what Hitler did, you know, in 1948, in the Second World War, 6 million Jews were killed, etc., etc. Why is, you know, how can that be stopped where ordinary civilian, you know, Palestinian Germans can't go about their daily business? In fact, to the extent that to become a German citizen in one of the German states, they've actually just passed a law saying you have to sign a declaration or something to say you accept Israel's right to exist. Yes, what do you make of that? Yes, go ahead.
That's a federal thing. Yes, that's that German thing, not one of the states in Germany. That's a federal law that they're passing. And it's so draconian, it's so McCarthyite, it's so repressive that even UN experts are saying German democracy is in danger, basically. Germany, when it comes to this issue, is turning quite authoritarian. Quite authoritarian. The repression in Germany is unprecedented. We've never seen anything like it. Jewish Israeli BDS supporters in Germany are being called anti-Semitic by the white Christian establishment. Just imagine how ironic. First, so forget Palestinians and people of color. Of course, we are trampled upon. Every right of advocates are trampled upon. But even I'm saying Jewish Israeli advocates of Palestinian rights today are being silenced in Germany and labeled anti-Semitic. A very famous American writer was just denied a prize. There's a debate now whether they'll give it to her or not, because, and she's a Jewish daughter of Holocaust survivors. And she's famous. She writes for The New Yorker, a very big outlet in the US. Yet they're trying to deny her a prize because she said Gaza is a ghetto. And what Israel is doing to the Palestinians in Gaza is similar to what the Nazis did in some European states that they occupied against the Jewish community.
In the Warsaw ghettos, yes.
In the Warsaw ghetto. So just for saying that, she's paying a heavy price, and she's Jewish, daughter of Holocaust survivors. Sorry, they.
Yeah.
They use the pronoun they, not she.
Right.
So this is the level of repression in Germany. Every institution, every festival, every museum, every university, the repression is universal in Germany. For Palestinians, it's a very, very dangerous place to be.
Now, finally, before I let you go, prior to October 7th, arguably many had not heard of the Palestinian cause. Especially young people, millennials, Gen Zs, etc. But even more so is Palestinian voices, or the Palestinian voice and narratives and telling of history, was either muffled or questioned as incorrect or challenged. And it's still, some are still challenging it now. Specifically, I can say some of my listeners still challenge the history of Palestinians, Palestine, or Palestine in that space. Can you just give us, I don't know how long you've got to give us, but a brief history of that and why
Sure.
it's important that, because I had Mikko Pellet on here. Mikko Pellet said, look, when Palestinians tell their story, everybody questions them. When we Israelis tell Palestinian stories, other people somehow listen to us. And it just goes to show how totally insane that is. Over to you. I don't know how long you can give us, but please.
Sure. Just in a nutshell, the history of Palestine is not that debatable, really. Israeli historians, not just Palestinian historians and Arab historians, international historians, but also Israeli historians, they call themselves the new historians, including Professor Ilan Pape.
He's been our guest on this show. Yeah.
Professor Avi Schleim of Oxford University and others have written books on the history of Palestinian dispossession, ethnic cleansing, and how Israel came to be. To exist as a settler colony. So it's not like a secret or something that someone is claiming that's debatable. It's not debatable. In 1948, Israel was declared as a state. It was established as a state on the ruins of Palestinian society. Before that date, before May 15th, 1948, when Israel was established, it spent Zionist militias, if you want to call them, very well armed by the Brits, went on massacre after massacre, killing, ethnically cleansing Palestinians, and they continued after the establishment of the state to push us out, push indigenous Palestinians out. As a result, during the establishment of the State of Israel, those militias and later the Israeli army itself officially ended up depopulating more than 500 Palestinian villages and towns, then destroying them completely so that Palestinians cannot go back, and shooting any refugee who tried to go back home. They ethnically cleansed the majority of the indigenous Palestinians from our homeland. So they occupied about 78% of historic Palestine, which was under the British rule before then. So the British Empire, the British colonial power in Palestine, armed them, supported them, gave them every possible way to do this, to ethnically cleanse Palestinians and to establish a Jewish supremacist settler colony, basically. In 1967, Israel occupied the remaining part of Palestine, which is Gaza and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. That was occupied in 67, during another wave of ethnic cleansing where hundreds of thousands were expelled to Jordan or to Egypt or elsewhere. So in two phases of ethnic cleansing, a majority of the Palestinians became refugees, whether inside historic Palestine or in exile. So today the Palestinian people are made of roughly three constituencies. When we talk about Palestinians, it's very important for listeners to remember. Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, occupied since 1967, are 38% only of the Palestinian people. They're not the majority.
Right.
12% of the Palestinian people are citizens of present-day Israel, yet treated as second-class citizens with less rights than Jewish Israelis, because it's an apartheid state. 50% of Palestinians are in exile, not allowed to go home. So, as Desmond Tutu once said, and as several South African leaders once said, apartheid, in Israeli apartheid, makes South African apartheid look like a picnic in comparison. I mean, that's
a big statement. Yes.
The head of the South African Parliament, a former head of the South African Parliament, said that statement, actually. She said, that makes our apartheid look like a picnic in comparison. And when she was asked by the media, she said, we never had F-16s bomb the Bantustans. Yes, they put us in Bantustans and stole our land like the Palestinians faced, yes, but they never put us in a cage and bombed us. We've never faced that. So imagine today with the genocide, as you mentioned, with the destruction of schools and hospitals and every aspect of life, every life-sustaining structure is being destroyed. Bakeries, solar panels, everything is being destroyed to make our lives impossible so that people will have to leave. That's ethnic cleansing.
Thank you so much. But let me just end with this. I was listening to an interview with the Undersecretary of the UN Humanitarian Wing today, and he said something. He said he's been at the job for some 40 odd years or 50 odd years or so. And he said he's seen many genocide, many wars, and has, you know, the Undersecretary of the Humanitarian Wing, he's been everywhere. But he said the one thing that makes the Palestinian genocidal war very, very different is that there doesn't appear to be a line, no line that cannot be crossed. Yes. I'm paraphrasing him now. And that, he said, is what makes their job most difficult, because they're not able to plan, because usually they would have the safe space and then they'll be able to plan, do the humanitarian plan and implementation, etc., etc., because there are safe zones, etc. But when they give sort of the geopolitic map to Israel and say, look, these are the UN spaces, it still gets bombed.
That's why we need solidarity in the form of a military embargo. We need Nigerians who support our struggle to push for a military embargo, to boycott Israeli products and companies that are involved in the Israeli violations of human rights, academic boycotts, cultural boycotts, sports boycotts. Israel has to be treated like apartheid South Africa was treated, as the world's pariah. This is the price it has to pay, or else this will be the doctrine used by every powerful state against less powerful nations.
Mr. Omar Bugatti, a human rights activist and co-founder of BDS, thank you so much for giving us your time, but even much longer than you had planned to. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll go on a quick break, Lagos, Nigeria. We'll be right back.
99.3 Nigeria Info.
Let's talk.
Welcome back to Borderlines, people. You heard me read. My second guest isn't able to be with us because, let's be honest, journalists are being killed in Palestine. Now, I'd like you to listen to the next voice note. I'd like you to listen to it, and then we're going to talk about it. I did discuss it with Omar Bugatti just now, but I'd like you to listen to it, and then we will talk about it for this last leg of the show. The telephone number you're going to be calling is 0700 993 993 993. The female only line is 0146571900. This is a speech that was given by the Palestinian ambassador to the UN. The Pakistani ambassador to the UN during the vote of resolution 377. Hold on to your calls because the lines are on fire. Listen to this and then we're going to talk about it.
This resolution was co-sponsored by over 100 member states when it was submitted in the Security Council. It obtained the affirmative votes of 13 of the 15 council members, but it failed to pass due to the negative vote of a permanent member of the Security Council. Yet the international community is not without recourse. The UN Charter provides the General Assembly with considerable residual powers, and acting under the Uniting for Peace process, we can take action to demand a halt to the war which is taking place and killing thousands of people every week. The draft resolution is one we are confident will elicit the support of the vast majority of the UN membership. Pakistan has not co-sponsored this draft resolution, and we have not done so because we reserve the right to submit amendments to ensure that the text which is adopted by the General Assembly is equitable and balanced. And it is a matter, therefore, of deep regret, if not surprise, that some friends of Israel have introduced amendments to once again condemn only one side, but exonerate the other. Unlike Canada, I cannot appeal to their sense of equity and justice. But what we can do is to appeal to the sense of humanity, of justice and fairness of the rest of the UN membership. And I'm confident that this entire membership will not agree to place the blame only on Hamas, but not on Israel. That would be unjust, unfair, and inequitable. Mr. President, when you deny people freedom and dignity, when you humiliate and trap them in an open-air prison where you kill them as if they were beasts, they become very angry and they do to others what was done to them. And therefore, for Austria and my friend from the United States to blame Hamas in their amendments is not equitable, is not just. The blame, if it's to be placed, has to be placed on both parties, and especially on Israel. Mr. President, with the end of the pause, the skies over Gaza are filled with projectiles of death. Attack helicopters, drones, artillery shells, tank shells, mortars, bombs, missiles. Israel has dropped 25,000 tons of explosives on Gaza, nearly the equivalent of the atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Israel's goal is not only to erase Hamas. This is a war against the Palestinian people. Israel's goal is to erase not only a people, but the entire idea of Palestine. Its campaign is a carbon copy of the massive campaigns of racial slaughter by other settler colonial regimes in history. Mr. President, over 18,000 Palestinians in Gaza have been killed another 42,000 wounded, and more than 1.8 million people, over 80% of Gaza's population, have been driven from their homes. Thousands are missing, buried under the rubble. And yet Israel is not deterred. Is this any form of legitimate self-defense when you can kill 18,000 civilians with impunity and enjoy the protection in the Security Council against action? Therefore, I would appeal to all the membership to see this one-sided slaughter that is taking place. If Hamas is named and not Israel, you will provide a justification to the Israeli war machine to continue its roulette wheel of death. I believe that this is not the intention of the membership of the United Nations, to justify, to give a justification for the genocide that is taking place. I would therefore, on behalf of my delegation, on behalf of all the Arab countries, on behalf of the OIC, appeal to all the membership to vote against the amendments proposed in L28 by Austria and L29 by the United States. In case these amendments are adopted, Pakistan will submit sub-amendments to these in order to restore balance, in order to name Israel as the perpetrator of the mass crimes that are taking place in Gaza today. I thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, let your calls come in. Did you listen to that? Rarely do we get enough time to talk on borderlines. We have some 26 minutes or so. You can call me on 0700-993 as a result of what's happened to a close friend, former colleague of my guest. We now have time to talk. I'm coming to your calls now. I can see the lines are alive. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Sisi Oge.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Okun. How are you?
Calling from Bagada.
Thank you. How are you?
I have actually taken time to listen to this discourse.
Mm-hmm.
All the time, you get learned people from Palestine mm-hmm. talking about the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
There is this pain that war does not recognize who is right,
mm-hmm.
but who is left.
Mm-hmm.
You ask the question, what do they want? I wasn't able to, listen at that point in time. But I think they should be talking of peace, safety, security.
Mm-hmm.
These are their brothers. These are their brothers. Is it when so many of them have been killed that they now go for peace? Whatever led to Hamas going into Israel to commit the atrocities, whatever has furthered it, to the extent that Israelites are now dealing with them this way, I think that Palestine should be sincere enough to know what they want and make sure that it's settled. Let both parties live together.
Okun, you ask, thank you for that. You asked before you go, you said you didn't hear that. What do they want? If you've heard any Palestinians talk, in not just on borderlines, on any channel, any media space, any session, any discussion, any interview, they want peace just as much as you and I cherish our peace. They want to stop being killed just as much as you and I like our lives. They want peace. Now, you're possibly asking, what do they want with regards to coexisting with Israel? Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. Let me try and answer. You have two divisions, and this is not just about Palestinians. You have it's a line. Some people, right, including Israel, say they want a one-state solution. Some people, including some Palestinians, say they want a two-state solution. This is what the political solution and discussion that is yet to have. In the UN, it is said that the two-state solution became, if you like, a running joke because it had been parked and was gathering dust on the shelf since the passing of Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin, who were both very much for the two-state solution. So I can also tell you that the one thing that Israel, through Netanyahu and the Israeli ambassador to the UK said recently, just a couple of days ago on Sky News, is that they want to occupy Gaza. They believe, Netanyahu said, he's not going to go the Oslo way. Right? So we don't know where we are right now. I'm just giving you the facts as I know it. What do the Palestinians want? It's about what is the way forward, right? That's what I think you want to know.
Yeah.
And the way forward is divided right now.
What's the way forward? I think it's important. Let them stop losing their people. It doesn't make sense.
Well, they're not the ones losing their people. Their people are actually being killed. But the lions are alive, Okon. You and I have talked for so long, you get me in trouble. This is not done for conversations. You can't be getting me in trouble. I have to be a good girl. This is one. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much. Good to speak to you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello, Cecile.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What's your name and where you calling from?
I just want to...
What is your name and where you calling from, please? What is your name? What is your name and where you calling from, please? Godwin. Go ahead.
Godman.
Go ahead.
When we go to the church, we hear from both churches. This war is... They are both partisan. So
when you hear what? Sorry, your line is not clear. We hear from what? Say that again, slowly.
When they're in a church setting, there is both parties. You have to have the judgment as to hear from both parties.
Let's hear from both parties, yeah?
Yes. So in this, many of times you've told only the Palestinians to talk and talk, but we've not heard from the Israeli.
Should I answer that question? I hope it's a question so I can answer it for you. Excellent. Let me answer it for you. The station, if you know anybody at this station, they will tell you, we have done our darndest to get pro-Israel voices on this show. I had the Israeli ambassador. We reach out to the embassy. And those who have sent me WhatsApp messages, I mean, sorry, not WhatsApp messages, but messages on my Instagram, I have told them, if you know anybody who has a strong enough knowledge who can speak for the other side, send me their details and I'll have them on my show. Absolutely. But guess what? Till now, I haven't had one because I had the Israeli ambassador. Right? Next week, we're going to be giving you a special report. Listen to me. Next week, we are going to be giving you a special report from Israel. Do you think that is because we are biased? Who do you think is going to be giving that special report? Because we haven't been able to find one. Do you know one that you can recommend live right now?
I'm just looking to get the Israeli.
No, but that, you're not listening to me. Do you know one that you can recognize? You can actually recommend right now. Do you know one? Send it to our WhatsApp. 08. And as a journalist, I reach out to people. Listen to me and do not tell me my job. My name is not Rufai and I don't work for Arise. But I will correct you on something. Okay? Listen very carefully. There's our WhatsApp number. 0809-597-5805. If anybody listening to this, I've actually reached out to an Israeli family in Nigeria. They're a couple. They have a child in the IDF. They wouldn't come on. So don't you dare tell me that I'm a journalist. Goodbye.
All right.
Hello. Yes, good afternoon.
Good evening,
my dear. Sorry. Good evening. I'm still in the studio. So it's like everything is still afternoon.
Yeah. My thing, I'm calling from Kushope.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think on this Israel-Palestinian crisis, many people are just, you know, taking some emotion to come to their conclusion without knowing the originality of this problem between Israel and the Palestine. It's only when somebody went back to 1947 after the Second World War. Initially, at that time, there is only Palestine. There is nothing like Israel. But the United Nations, with its resolution, create a country called Israel. And the Palestine at that time refused to accept their own country. If they said they accept that country at that time, you could have two states, even since that time, because that's the plan of the United Nations at that time, to create two states. And that's when they created Israel, the Jews from Europe, that have no country after the destruction of the Hitler in the Second World War, they accept it immediately to form their country, Israel. But the Palestinians, at that time, they are seen as injustice to come and divide their country and give it to Israel. They refuse to accept the statehood chief at that time. So if you cannot go back to that history, you won't understand what is happening. And no matter how, if somebody has a human feeling, when you look at the destruction in Gaza, at least what I expect from any human being, you have to look at it as a humanitarian factor. You know, there is no justification whatsoever reason for the destruction by the Israelis to Palestinians. If you are fighting Hamas, you can't be destroying every single building in Gaza. You have to find the Hamas. The Hamas member can be identified. Find them. Fight them. There is no need of that destruction. More than 18,000 people.
Thank you very much. I need you to round up. Yes.
So, in conclusion, I think the Western nations who are backing Israel, they have to, in the matter of urgency for the humanitarian reason, to tell the Israel the killing of civilians is not acceptable, because the world
stands
when Hitler is killing Israel during the Second World War.
Thank you very much. As the world should. We should all stand in solidarity against such things. Hello.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Ayo.
Go ahead, Ayo. You have a minute because the lines are alive. So, no, 2 minutes. I have to start cutting it now.
Okay.
We're almost done.
My own contribution is a two-state solution.
There's too much noise. Please stay away from that ping.
Okay, number one, I stand for a two-state solution.
Okay.
Then number two, Hamas is not the problem.
Okay.
If Hamas should release the hostage today, I bet you won't hear of war again.
Okay.
Then everybody can come on deck and talk on diplomacy. You can't keep holding the hostages and allow them to stay one side. Then you bring negotiator. Who does that? That's not Nigeria. No. Release the hostages. The war will end. Come on deck. You have your two-state solution. That's what we have stand for. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hello?
Hello. Good evening, Sisoga.
Good evening. Who am I speaking with, please?
My name is Mazu.
Go ahead, Mazu.
Sisoga, look at this. 70-something years slavery claim.
75 years.
75 years is too wrong. That is a satanic way of life. You understand? Israel and America, both England, they are all practicing satanic life.
Oh, I don't know about that. Where I can't have you calling. You can't be using that word, please.
I'm sorry, but killing somebody, what is it?
I get you, but let's find another word, otherwise I'll have to cut you off. Please find another word to use.
I'm just sorry for this very word I know.
I understand.
Forgive me.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can say horrible.
What I'm trying to say now is that if the whole world must come out and stop this nonsense, they have to do that. If these people are not going to this, if I am the Palestinian, I would bargain with even Russia, China would expect to come assist me to fight Israel. If it happened that I bomb all Israel, I can do that. If I see any,
I'm sorry, I can't have any of you. You see, this is why, one of the reasons why I reduce calls on borderlines. You cannot come on this show and call any country satanic or talk about bombing anywhere. I will cut you off. That's what I did just then. Irrespective of which side you're on. And you're not going to come on here and tell me, oh, you haven't had an Israeli person, because I keep saying the same thing again. If you know any Israeli person, academic, diplomat, member of the community, whatever, who is willing to come on Borderlines, send their details to 0809-597-5805, # Borderlines. Okay? And we will reach out to them. I'm coming to your calls now. We don't have much time, so I'm going to be cutting down. Let's make it fast and quick, eh? Thank you. Hello.
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 Yes, good afternoon. Oh, good evening, rather.
Good afternoon, madam.
Yes, good afternoon, sir. What's your name?
My name is John.
Go ahead, John. You have a minute.
Okay, what I want to say is this. Israel, they are not attacking the main problem. You see, Iran has been one instigating Hamas. And they are not even doing them anything. Even at the end, if Hamas goes, another terrorist group will still arrive because of Iran. So they should deal with Iran seriously.
So what would you like them to do with Iran?
I don't know. Maybe even strike them militarily.
Okay, so if you strike Iran military, are you aware that Iran has nuclear, is a nuclear power? Do you think, hold on, bear with me, it is a nuclear power, number one. Number two, what then do you think is going to happen to the world once everybody starts fighting with their nuclear power? Because if Iran strikes with their nuclear power, somebody else will strike with their nuclear power. So let's think about what we're suggesting.
Okay, Israel is not going to strike them with nuclear power.
It doesn't matter. If you hit me with something, you can't control how I respond.
Let me finish. At least let them feel a little death.
Like what? Like what?
Hamas have been killing Israel. Israel have been killing.
But you didn't say Israel. You said Iran. What I am asking you is
sitting comfortably here.
Right. What I am asking you.
Getting all this war.
So if you, if according to you,
and nobody is talking about them, telling them to shut up.
If according to you, it is Iran. I am saying to you, you're saying, you've just suggested on this show that Israel should hit Iran. If Israel, you know, bear with me, if Israel sends, I don't know, a rocket bomb, whatever, to Iran, you cannot, and neither can Israel, the UN, or even the US for that matter, control how Iran will respond. So let's be careful what we wish for. Hello?
Do you know that I'm not a coward?
Go ahead, Koboko. You have a minute.
Thank you. Hamas are coward. Why are they using Palestinians to shoot themselves?
What do you mean, why are they using
Palestinians?
Oh, I see.
I want Israel to kill all the Hamas. Let them extinguish, exterminate, shot. English is too much.
Okay. I didn't understand that, but anyway. Hello? Oops, you snooze. Hello? Oh, you seem to turn your radio down, please.
Hello, is it okay?
Yes, good evening.
Yeah, good evening. Thank you for picking my call.
I don't choose which call to pick. I just, it's random. What's your name and where you calling from, please?
Yeah, this is Ola from Suleri.
Ola, you have a minute. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you very well for bringing this to fore. I think the people that are contributing are not looking at the explanation and the issue. They are just contributing based on their biasness and their sentiment. We are talking about human life. If somebody goes to Southeast and kill 80,000 people and say because...
Can you please stop that? Let's not do that. Can you stay on topic? Otherwise,
okay,
I will cut you off.
Let me go back to the topic. The issue is human life, whatever the biasness, Israel should halt this killing.
Okay.
If Hitler continue and nobody stop Hitler, would we still have any Jew in the world today?
Thank you. Hello?
Good evening, Sisi Oge.
Good evening. What's your name and where are you calling from, please?
Thank you very much, Sisi Oge. You are on to Philip from Ikorodu.
Go ahead, Philip. You have a minute.
I tell you this. You see, growing up, my dad always said, don't look for trouble in any form. But if they look for your trouble, you give them double, and he will ride behind you. So what Hamas did was to look for trouble when they did not have the capacity. And Israel is dealing with them in the language they desire.
For 75 years, did you listen to my guest?
The IDF commander said, by the time they are through with the Hamas and the Palestinians, they will regret that action.
Okay.
So whatever form of agitation they wanted to do, there are various ways and means. It was cruel.
For 75 years. Did you listen to Omar? No, I'm just asking. No. You're starting your history. I'm not criticizing. You're starting from the 7th of October. I am saying to you, there is 70. No. They actually haven't. That is the point. No. No, that is a lie. That
is attacking them as that October.
Absolutely. Please go and do the homework. You see, all opinions are valid, but you can't have your own facts. Then you don't know very much, I'm afraid.
And Lion will devour them.
I understand that. What I'm saying to you, history did not begin on the 7th of October.
Well,
that is it. Go and read.
I'm not disputing whatever.
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah, but there everything. It's like saying, Sisi Oge, you only existed when you came to Nigeria Info.
Biblically, Israelites are always strong. So you don't have that power. There are means to agitate. You don't fight. You don't kill.
Thank you very much.
Forgetting that they don't have the strength.
Thank you very much for your contribution. Thank you. Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening, Antimi.
Antimi? What's Antimi? Who am I speaking with, please?
Michael is my name.
Sorry, Emmanuel.
Michael.
Michael, go ahead. You have a minute.
Yeah. I want to say I enjoyed the interview with the
Omar Baguchi. Yes.
Yeah.
Omar Baguchi.
Is quite deep. And then the speech, the voice play of the, is it Afghanistan or Pakistan? Now, my own opinion is that the Arab world are setting off, upsetting, walking us towards a very dangerous end.
Why do you say that?
The Arab world has hand in Sudan. They have the Yemen issue. And it's even that Yemen that was almost destroyed by Saudi Arabia that is now being used to fight Gaza now. So there is a...
Correction. I beg your pardon. You see, everybody's entitled to opinion, but facts I will correct. That's within my... The Yemenis have chosen... Notice I said chosen to side with the Palestinians. You cannot say they are being used because they will say they it is their decision and they've been saying it since. So go ahead.
That is why I said, in my opinion, there is an underground hand that is like coming together from the Arab world to set a point through which they will start the attack on the Jew, on Israel. And I want to say, I do not support what the Arab world is doing to the world today. And they need to have a way which the world, the international world, talk to them. And this is one.
Are you aware that the people who have actually been negotiating peace since October the 7th are Arab countries, primarily Egypt and the Qataris, the UAE?
Yes.
So why then would you make such a statement? But I've got to go. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay.
Hello. Hello. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. Guchiku on the line.
Oh, Guchiku, good evening. Go ahead. You have a minute.
Yeah, Guchiku, yeah. I think what is happening here is that when it is not good, an injustice to one is an injustice to all, whatever. Whether Hamas, with Israel. Just like you said, if Israel hits Iran, how do you think Israel will respond? When Hamas was hitting Israel, they just know that Israel is going to respond this way. So I'm an appealing. A life has been lost. Israel lost a life. Man, Hamas, and the Palestinian are losing their life. A life that one cannot create. Just like what is even happening. Somebody even tell you about the Baptists. Somebody, they are killing people in the Baptists. War plane everywhere in the Baptists. Just what is happening. We are killing so people in the world. Stop killing souls. You cannot create human beings. Don't kill human beings anymore. Let there be ceasefire. I'm advocating for that.
Thank you.
Talk about what is no good. That is my own opinion.
Thank you very much. Ceasefire. Thank you.
Anywhere. An injustice to one. It's an injustice to all. Everywhere
thank you.
In the world.
Thank you.
Please.
Thank you. Hello?
Hello?
Good evening. You have to turn your radio off, please.
Yeah, I'm off.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, this is Ferdinand. I'm calling from Ikeja.
Go ahead, Ferdinand. You have a minute.
Okay. I think, I don't know. I think you're actually doing it well, but I must tell you that Israel have right to defend themselves.
I didn't say they didn't.
If you can come up and kill 1,000 people at a time or more and kidnap some people, I want them to go to sleep and say nothing. They are not Nigerians that do not value human life, like, but they value cow. They value human life. So they have to put an end to it completely.
So would you say killing 20,000, if I may interrupt you, would you say killing... Bear with me, my brother.
If you come and kill like that, I can kill 1,000,000 if I can do it.
Right. Right, I
because,
see.
Because my people's life matters to me, not like other people that don't care about people.
So innocent children and women who don't know anything.
I think Hamas started with children, women, and other people too.
So right now we're at about...
They kidnap women, they kill children.
We're at about 10,000 or so children that have been killed in Palestine.
They kill one. Mm-hmm. Because Israel value, at least one Israeli is equal to 10,000 Hamas.
Thank you.
So that's their own value. So they can do it that way.
And you're okay with that?
No problem.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. Good evening.
Evening.
Good evening. What's your... I'm Kingsley calling for me.
Kingsley, yes. Quickly, 1 minute. We're almost closing now.
Honestly, I've been hearing the contributions. Yeah, the people are making. The only thing is this: as the UN has voted that they should stop the war,
ceasefire.
At least they should. Yeah, the ceasefire. These are human beings. The killings are human beings. Nobody will say it's because it is happening there. You know, if it happens to somebody you don't know, it will be as if it is flies that are being killed.
Indeed.
These are human beings. They should stop it. At least 10,000 to 1,000 something, it should be enough.
Thank you.
It should be enough. No matter the offense, they should stop the killing. It's too much.
Thank you very much.
Barbaric.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm coming to my very last call because literally we're closing. So you've got to be able to do it in just under a minute, whoever you are. Randomly, I'm picking a line. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening. This is Oladipupo calling from Isola.
Oladipupo, yes.
Yeah, I think what the people are missing is when the UN Secretary General said the October 7th did not happen in vacuum.
He said in isolation, yeah.
Yeah. So people need to go and sit down and learn what has been happening before that October 7th. One of the demands of Hamas is you have about 7,000 of our Palestinians inside your prisons. Not taken to all courts, nothing done to them. You just arrest them.
It's called administrative detention. You don't get to know the evidence that's against you.
Yeah.
And let me just help you there. It's especially in the West Bank where you also have Palestinian Israelis but they live under the military law, military courts, whereas Israelis live under a civic court. Go ahead.
Okay. So also, the re-establishment of Israeli settlements, they keep on demolishing the Palestinians' homes and establishing their own settlements there. So all these,
which is against international law.
Yes, even within, like, the news I listened to this Monday, within this September up to this December, they still, Israeli authorities still approve additional 1,500 homes of Jews,
correct,
of the Israelis,
yes,
on the land of the Palestinians. So that keep on continuing.
Okay,
but we need to just,
I need you to wrap up.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we just need to put ourselves in the shoes of the Palestinians. Assuming meant movement for the emancipation of Niger Delta, we knew what they did when they were active.
I really don't want to bring any of that into that. Please. Please.
We then now strike, and they now, based on that, all the population around there is now being destroyed. So let us put our shoes in the, let's put ourselves in the shoes of the Palestinians.
Thank you very much.
People should
learn.
To learn, not just to stick on their own idea, their own opinion all the time. Thank you.
Okay.